Greetings are now started.
Thank you, Laura. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is a translation and transliteration of contact information PDP working group on Thursday, the 10th of April, 2014. On the call today, we have Pichanan Kormampatana, Peter Green, Petter Renforth, Jennifer Chung, Wanawit Akuptra, Chris Dillon, Jim Galvin, Saramid Hussein, and a little bit later, Efren Percy Kenyatta will be joining. We have no apologies today. From staff, we have Julie Hedlund, Lars Hoffman, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is Chris Dillon. Rudy Van Snick emailed me that he would probably not be able to make this call. In fact, he may have said he couldn't make this call a few weeks ago, so let's count that as an apology. And move into number three on the agenda, which is statements of interest. If anybody on the call has a change in their statement of interest in the last call, we have to bring that up. Seeing no hands raised, I think we can move into number four on the agenda, which is the responses from SOs and ACs, and excellent. We've got the IPC response on the screen. So now, Petter, I think you were saying you were able to present that. Is that all right?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just get my annotated copy ready. Please start.
Okay, thanks. Well, as stated here, this is initial comments, so it's our first expressions and replies to the questions. But we also thought it was important to give out our comments at this stage. I'm not sure that I need to go into all the details, but if I say it more generally, on the first question, we think it's from an IP perspective, as well as for the identification in general, when it comes to these kind of internationalist domain names and contact information, that the WHOIS information with that is or at least should be registered in respect of each language script that is related to the home country and address of each holder. But it's also most desirable and necessary to translate contact information to what we say a single common language in order to keep the WHOIS information easily searchable and readable for all global internet users. And before I pass on to the next one, I discussed this issue with some other participants the last weekend, and I got some inputs from other representatives from other groups that when we talk about all the different kinds of translation, transliteration, some members from the official committee say, actually stated that it could be fair enough to have maybe something that could be called an official ICANN translation, so that if possible to keep to one single English translation, even if as we have seen there are many kind of different local translations. And on the benefits Well, I would say that it was finally formed in a more diplomatic way, what I originally stated, but without a proper translation or transliteration of contact information, the WHOIS record will, in fact, lose its clarity, and it may cause difficulties for both for the domain holders in confirming that they have updated and correct contact information, which is also important when it comes to renewals and in aspects to see if it's the real holder. But may also cause unnecessary legal actions or unnecessary alternative dispute resolutions actions where the holder of domain name cannot be properly identified and contacted. I mean, in many cases, it's the initial possibility to contact the holder to solve some difficulties may actually release the need for going forward with a dispute resolution action. So, in fact, a combination of contact information in both the holder's local language and one what we call worldwide acceptable transliteration should provide an adequate legal basis for sufficient identification of contact information in national legal actions as well as in global domain name disputes. And on the question of should it be mandatory for all GTLDs, yes, we think so. I mean, although the ambiguities and thereby the need for clarifications are more obvious when it comes to contact information, not using the current ASCII WHOIS, there are, in fact, difficulties to solve in all languages. I mean, I'm from Sweden, and we have our dots over the O's and A's that can be without the dots, and with the dots can be quite different kind of words. And, I mean, we're talking about a country with just maybe three or four letters that have that that kind of problem. So, I mean, it would solve a lot if translation and or transliteration of contact information is mandatory and for all GTLDs. And if I scroll down to how should bear the burden of translation contact information, we actually, I know that we discussed this at the last meeting we had, but here we initially support the ALEC statement that decision on who should bear the burden of transforming contact information should be informed by the views of and impact of all affected parties, which could include the provider of the information and those involved in collecting and maintaining the information. So kind of split it up. And also on the last question, as we see it now, the cost should be divided by between registries and registrars, but also having in mind that the final responsibility of correct contact information lies on each registrant. That's it.
Thank you for that, Petter. I think there is a question in the chat room about the concept of official ICANN translation. Actually, that was a question I had as well, but I'm just wondering whether Pity Nan has the same question I have. Basically, I thought that A lot of organizations, actually something's come through, let's have a look at that. Just wondering if we actually should focus on the validation and verification, that's actually another issue. Okay, let's stick with the ICANN official translation concept. Now, there, a lot of organizations actually decide that they want particular forms of their organizational name in English or in another language. So, typically you might have a Chinese organization that has a form in Chinese characters, which could be transliterated, but typically they will have a translated form, and it will be an officially translated form for the organization. And then there may be an acronym, and they may do that for more than one language. So essentially a lot of this work may already have been done by organizations. So it's quite interesting to see a proposal that perhaps ICANN should rubber stamp perhaps some of those translations. That was really the comment I was wanting to make about that concept. I suppose there are straight away we get into issues of validation and verification, because we have to say, well, are we going to be validating the original forms, or are we going to be validating forms in other languages? There are two questions about this. One from Jim. Would you like to ask yours, Jim?
Yes, I have a couple of questions. Did you want me to focus in a particular area, or I have a couple of questions about a couple different things?
I think probably if we go by area, that might be the quick way to proceed. So please address this one first, and then we'll come back to other areas a little later.
So this is the validation is what you're talking about here. Right?
Well, actually, it started off with being an issue about official translations, but validation comes into that pretty quickly.
Okay. If you want to talk about official translation, then I'll hold my question.
Okay. Thank you, Petter. Would you like to come back with something on this?
Yeah, just a comment, and now I speak just from a personal point of view. If there are from some parts verbs, what you call the local official translation, it could still be used by ICANN as the accepted translation.
Yes.
I don't see it contradictory to what we wrote of it. Correct me if I'm wrong there. But again, as we have spoken about so many different possibilities to translate, where we looked at the globally on each country, I think it would be good if we could have at least one source that everyone could turn to and see this is the translation that is at least accepted by ICANN on these point of views, even if it not may be the single local official translation.
Thank you. Yes, this is Chris speaking. There is a situation where whereby, for example, quite a lot of Chinese organizations have no official English translation. So that is certainly an issue which needs to be solved one way or another. And I think earlier on in our calls we were actually saying, if there isn't an official translation, we were actually saying probably transliterate it, because, you know, even if there isn't an official translation, you can always transliterate into English or into Romanization. But the other possibility may be to say, well, if there isn't an official translation, you know, which is okayed by the organization, that somebody else okays it. I think there may be some issue, for example, there may be some issues with going that way, because I feel that it's really important that the individual organizations are happy with those translations. And there may be some administrative overhead here, because if you're chasing organisations for an official translation and to, you know, to get something okay, that's something that could end up taking quite a lot of time. Now, I think Lars has had his hand up for some time, so sorry I've taken some time to get back to you. Would you like to ask something about this?
Thank you, Chris. Yes. Just two small things related to, standard verification. I read through the IPC's comments and also others that were submitted over the past few days. And I was just wondering, especially, I suppose it goes back to Petter, but also to other lawyers on this call. So for people who would use the contact information essentially, and who would benefit from being able to access the information in an ASCII script, whether they would, you know, I'm a law-adjacent person, let's say, and to me it would make more sense if I were to be given it a Chinese or a script that I didn't understand, that was clearly marked as where I can see this is the name, this is the email, but I wouldn't understand what it means or what the address is. I would assume that the lawyers and even law enforcement would undertake their own translation in any case, because they would assume that the original typed-in data is the more authoritative one. I mean, we can discuss whether that's true or not, but it just seems logical.
Thank you for that. I think a lot of people might think that certainly the original form, the Chinese, so if we use Chinese as an example, so in the Chinese case we might say that the original Chinese form in Chinese characters may end up being the most important form. And then, you know, if that particular organization has an English form, an English translated form, which it's happy to use, then it's fairly clear what happens. Then, you know, that's going to be easier for people to use. Now, if the organization doesn't have an official form, you know, it's possible for anybody to do a literal translation, but the problem is that different people will translate in different ways, so you then run the risk of getting several possible translations for the same organization, and, you know, you then may decide that you want to get back to the original organization and say, look, are you happy for this to be used as your name, and that could be time consuming. The alternative would be, there are other possible alternatives. One is just to use the original. Now, the problem with that is that I think if it is a language that you're not familiar with, I would wonder how happy people would be to do that. You know, particularly, you know, if it's a completely unrelated script. It's an interesting issue. Lars, would you like to come back on that?
Yeah, it's just an add-on to my thought. Because if you then think that if validation needs to take place at some point of some form or other, the registrant that's allowing people to register in a language different than ASCII will probably be able to verify whatever mechanism would be put in place at some point, probably through the EWT, be able to do that in that script that the registrar offers the registrant.
Yeah.
So validation would be possible in that matter. And then for somebody who doesn't speak that language, and I know we're talking about ASCII, obviously, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, the Russian authorities would like to know somebody who has registered a Korean website, and so ASCII is of no help to anybody. I suppose the issue is that in my view, and maybe I'm wrong, but I thought the important thing is that I understand from the Huis quest what is the email, what is the street address, and what is the name, and then whether that is in Chinese script or in Korean script or in Latin script essentially doesn't matter, because I can copy and paste that, I can have it translated myself, and I can contact that person. And if I don't speak Korean, well, then I have to find a way to contact them anyway. If I send them an English letter, chances are they won't be able to understand that in any case. So I'm just wondering whether the key to translate and transliterate clearly the form itself and make sure that everybody understands what of those intonations is speech, what of the intonation is the organizational name, and what of those is the email address, mm-hmm. rather than trying to translate it, which will lead to lower accuracy and probably much more difficult to validate, especially at the registrar level for those registrars that are not familiar with ASCII, because obviously those are around too. So that's just my 2 cents. Thanks.
Thank you. So are you suggesting that we just use the original script, or are you suggesting the other possible route, which is transliterating the original script?
I'm not suggesting anything at all. I just thought about this, and I'm just wondering what the most effective way is to do this for the end user.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, if I was an IP lawyer, if I was the German Federal Police, I wanted to make sure that the information first of all is correct. That's the key thing for me. That the information in there is as best validated as possible.
Yeah.
And the translation of that, or transliteration of that, is secondary, because if the information is correct, I will find a way to contact that person.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yes. Right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's clear. Pitinam, would you like to say something about this?
Hi, Pitinam here. I would agree with Lar that the translation and transliteration will be useful if the original data is correct. So that's why I'm asking if we want to focus on the validation. And also I agree with Peter earlier that he said about official local translation and transliteration body, which is, I think it makes more sense, especially when Thai translate to English, there are many exceptional cases. So I don't really see if it can have the single translation system. It probably have to be distributed to each country, and probably I can accredit each of that translator body. And maybe if it's not the translation, if it's not stopped there, so I can maybe should accredit the verification and validation body for each local country or administrative area. So that will make more sense for me. That's my thought.
Thank you very much. Peter, would you like to make a comment about that?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. I agree that the contact information being correct is oddly the most important element, because if you are transliterating or translating incorrect information, it is equally not very helpful. But I think that the question is, assuming that we have some kind of verification of the contact information, is it desirable that then be translated or transliterated into any uniform script. And for the just following on what Pidinan said, because of the complexity of these issues, both with translation and transliteration, and with local usage, the fact, I think, that the decentralized system of having the registrant and the registrar in each of their localities, they would be more apt to come up with a globally readable to the global internet users, rather than having each individual internet user, wherever they are in the world, come up with their own translation or transliteration in an attempt to contact the registrant.
Thank you. And I mean, specifically, what would that look like?
What would what look like, Chris?
So a solution like that was centralized. So you would have, therefore, some sort of central display of the contact information, but are you specifically suggesting that it should be in ASCII, or does it not matter how that is represented?
I think that this is me speaking from my personal perspective, but the entry in the local language, the local script, is for the convenience of the registrant and the registrar. If the global internet users, I thought what Lars was saying, and perhaps I misunderstood, was that the important thing is that original information is verified, so that that's the correct information. Because if that's the correct information, then the global internet users, regardless of where you are and regardless of what language or script you're familiar with using, you can find a way to contact that registrant. And I was just suggesting that based on the point that Pidinan just made, that the translation and transliteration, there are a number of variations that are possible, but there are already certain conventions in different countries for how certain elements of contact information, whether we're talking about company names, company forms, street, district, city names, are represented either in ASCII or other systems. So I'm not saying that it needs to be all in the ASCII script, but I think that I'm agreeing with Lars that the most important thing is that the original information is validated, but that doesn't preclude the desirability of having that validated contact information translated or transliterated into a common language or script.
Okay, thank you very much. That is clear. Okay. So I think perhaps now we should move on to other issues that came up during that. Now, I know Jim Galvin has some. Perhaps, Jim, would you like to bring up the other questions that you have now?
Yeah, I've been listening to all of this dialogue and trying to relate my questions back to what's here. I guess in my specific questions and going to what the IPC said, and I was thinking a little bit about their statements, and I wondered if we could get some additional discussion on what was meant by a couple of points here. So in the question about what exactly the benefits of the community are of translating, there's this comment that it would cause difficulties for domain holders in confirming that they've updated correct contact information, you know, if it's not translated and transliterated. And I guess I was wondering if we could say a little more about that. I'd like to understand that. From the point of view of a registrant that only speaks one language and would know, you know, very little, if anything, on average, about the translation or transliteration that might appear in the WHOIS record, I wonder if they could say a little more about what the difficulties are that they would have in verifying information if it's not translated properly. It feels like I'm trying to speak a double negative, but I hope my question makes sense. Or
it certainly makes sense. Yes. So you know, this is very much difficulties that arise when updating records, and that language is not one that is available to the registrars.
So that was one question that I put out there. I don't know if they can say more about that. Do you want me to ask my other question too, which is, it's kind of a similar question.
Yes, please do that.
So, let's see. There, let me just find it here in the text. I'm sorry. So there's a comment in here about validation, and it's a similar kind of comment.
Who is validation will not be possible in many cases, thus causing severe problems that will threaten the system itself. That's on page 2 in the middle.
Right. And what occurs to me there, and I think this has come out in the discussion that we've already had here, is from a technical point of view, it seems to me that if validation is going to occur, it has to occur in the original natural language. You wouldn't want to try to validate the translated or transliterated version. You'd want to validate or verify the original version. And so I'm wondering if, you know, we could get more information about their discussion about why it would be severe problems to validate if you couldn't translate or transliterate. That, at least from my experience, doesn't follow. And so I wondered, you know, what they had been discussing when they had come up with that statement. So those are my two questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Petter, are you? Do you have any further information about either of those?
Yeah, well, I'll try to just comment shortly. As I said initially, these comments has been filed more from a pure legal contractual point of view. And of course, I realize that from a more technical point of view, it's not that difficult. But it's as we see it, it's important to have a clear an easy way to check out that in a global matter that all OIS information is correct, and thereby easily solve a lot of initial problems before it goes further to any legal actions. And so that's we could rephrase it in some way, but that was actually what was meant here, that it's also in a way a secure way from the holder as such, that the contact information is easily understandable and readable also in a global way.
Okay, yes, thank you for that. Jim, does that make things any clearer?
Jim Galvin again for the transcript, probably should have been saying that all along. The question that comes to my mind is when I think about postal addresses and, you know, knowing whether that contact information is usable or not. One of the things that we observed in the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group is in looking at the UPU standards, you know, individual countries, you know, states get to decide what they want their postal addresses to look like. And so I guess I understand the legal perspective of wanting to see it in essentially a more globally universal language. I mean, English is often regarded in that way. So the desire to want to have it translated or transliterated, that wouldn't be the way I would expect verification and validation to be effective, because a nation state will decide for itself what it wants its postal addresses to look like, and those are going to be in the local language. They're not going to be in English.
Yeah.
If I want to send a postal letter to China, I need to indicate that address in Chinese, not in English. The Postal Service, you know, wouldn't deliver it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And one would expect validation, you know, for it to be in Chinese in order to properly validate it, too. So I think that the comment that it has to be, that coming from a legal perspective, I guess this makes sense, and I think that's the point that I just want to highlight, that this is a legal point of view, that it should be in English to make it more universally acceptable, if I can use that phrase. At the moment, it's not clear to me that that is a benefit to the system as a whole. It's a benefit to the particular constituency that's commenting. So that's an observation at the moment. Interested in any additional discussion that might shift my observation. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. There has been quite a lot of conversation in the chat room. I'll just have a quick look at that and check whether there is stuff that we need to pick up. Okay, so verification and validation needs to be done once, then the transformation, you will find the way to do it and contact the registrar. Yes. And something about wouldn't transformed contact information and verified defeat the purpose of the transformation. The priority should be the accuracy of the contact information in the native language script. However, transformation will become necessary. If transformation is necessary, transformed contact data are useless. If they're not validated, yes, okay. So this is just an added cost and raises additional challenges, yes. I suppose what's driving that is just the needs of people who cannot read that original form, so they cannot process it, they can't do anything with it, so that seems to be what's driving the need for transformation. I agree, and that's my point. As a lawyer or a law enforcement officer, would always translate the most reliable, i.e. the original information. Yes. Okay, and then Pitina saying, what needs to be done anyway. So if the validation and verification of the original information is the must-do, then we still have to do it and find a way to do it at minimum cost. That's certainly an interesting opinion. And then at minimum cost, so it should be some mechanism of ICANN accreditation. Yes, okay, so that is an interesting possibility. Amar, I think we're up to date. Would you like to bring something up on this?
I actually have a question on a different topic, so if you want to continue on this one before I ask.
Okay, well, let us first ask whether there are any other questions on this, otherwise we can certainly move into other areas. Lars is saying in the chat room that validation and verification of the contact information is not within the remit of this group. Okay. I'm not seeing any other questions about this, so perhaps, Amar, you'd like to bring up the other issues.
Thanks, Chris. I'm just Amar. I would, though, raise a question on Lars' last comment about validation and verification not being in agreement of this working group, because I do recall that it was mentioned in this working group's charter. But that's not my question. My question is regarding the last response IPC provided in its comments, which is the cost should be divided between registries and registrars, however, also having in mind that the final responsibility of correct contact information lies on each registrant. From my understanding, the RAA makes validation and verification, thus ensuring the accuracy of contact information, a contractual requirement for the registrar, not the registrant. In this model that the IPC is proposing, I wonder how that would be contractually enforceable. Are we saying here that the registrar will not be required to make sure that contact information is accurate and that this responsibility will be on the registrant? If that is the case, then how would that be enforceable? Would there presumably be some requirement to have a contract between each registrant and ICANN? I'm not clear on what the IPC is trying to say here, and I was hoping Petter could clarify.
Yes, I'd be really interested to hear more about that.
Can I just quickly reply to that? I don't think it's not so difficult that it may seem. What we had in mind was just to note that each domain holder, that's in all contracts, is liable for having an updated clean contact information so that the holder can be with the right address and everything. So that's
okay.
What I say.
Okay, thank you for that.
And sorry, I have to leave within a couple of minutes because we have next agenda as a council meeting.
Okay,
a few minutes
now. So, I think any other questions about any aspect of this? Amo, you've just taken your hand down. I know Jim does have other issues with this. I wonder if there might just be time to ask a couple of quick questions about them.
Chris, this is Amo. If I could just follow up on Petter's last comment.
Yes, by all means.
To be clear, that would mean that contractually the final responsibility of correct contact information would actually lie on the registrar, not the registrant. Of course, there would be a responsibility in the contract between the registrant and the registrar that the registrant would provide and update his, her, or its contact information appropriately, but the final responsibility from a contractual perspective between ICANN and the registrar would indeed lie with the registrar, not the registrant. Is that correct?
Was that a question for me? Better?
Yes.
Well, it's as I said, it's just a note on the current status that all registrants have to update with correct contact information. So no changes there, as we see it.
Thank you. Any other quick questions for Petter before he goes to the other meeting? Now, there's been some stuff going on in the chat window, so I'll just have a quick look and check whether there's anything we need to bring up here. Okay, so let's talk about validation and verification and remits. And then Charter does not speak to the validation of the original contact information. It's mentioned with regards to potential transformation of contact information. Okay. Okay, thank you. Now, I'm just going to double-check other... Petra, I don't know how much longer you can be with us, but I was going to ask you actually to use Singapore as an example, because early on there is this talk about local WHOIS information. So if we take Singapore as an example, you've got four local languages. So does this actually mean that, would local WHOIS information mean in a case of a country with several local languages, does it actually mean that information in all of the local languages? I was slightly surprised by that.
I don't have a clear reply on that. As said, in general, you mean that a translation into English, so to speak, on each four of the local. Is that what you mean?
Yes, because you see, what it's saying is, as the local WHOIS information should be registered in respect of each language script related to the home country. So, if we're talking about Singapore, it's actually four different languages. So, I'm just sort of confirming that that this is suggesting that be put in a new WHOIS system, or whether. Whether it's central WHOIS or some kind of local WHOIS, I was really quite puzzled about this.
What we mean there is that in the official language that the contact information is registered within, and I presume that it's not registered in all four.
So it is actually only it is only the registration language. That clears that one up. The information is registered. I think that is the end of my questions, and I'm not sure whether you've got time for any more. Are there any more out there? Okay. Now, beyond that, a few more things going on in the chat room. I'll just have a quick look at those. The cost of translation and transliteration when one registrant holds more than one domain name. Okay. I see. So even if he uses the same contact information, it will need to be transformed more than once. That's a lovely point. Yeah. So, I mean, ideally, there might be some sort of system where, you know, if there was a particular address that somehow that would be flagged up, if it had already been transformed in some way. But, that's an additional requirement for any system. Okay, we are quite close to the end of the meeting, and there is another response that we've had from the International Federation of Intellectual Property Attorneys. I actually think, that's displayed on the screen. Make a quick decision whether we try and do something in the few minutes remaining. I think we should start it and make and just see how far we get with it. As far as I know, there is. Thank you very much, Petter, for answering all of those questions. It was most interesting. I think probably I should try and present this FICPI thing, or at least start the process.
Chris, this is Amar. I have a question on this, please.
Yes. Fire away.
From a process perspective, I'm just a little puzzled about the comments we're receiving both from FIGP and from Mark Monitor. At this point, where I was under the impression that we just sent out requests for input to the different SOs and ACs, and we haven't opened up the working group's work to public comment yet. And I would assume that at that point, when this working group has an initial report, that's when we would start getting this input. I'm just wondering why we're getting input from these organizations.
Thank you, Amma. Yes, I'm not. Yes, that thought crossed my mind as well. So yes, in a sense, it is. I am actually not sure how they heard of what we were doing. I don't know whether anybody on the call knows how that happened. I don't. I mean, as far as I am concerned, basically, I'm interested in ideas on this subject, really, wherever they're coming from. So, I'm quite happy to. To look at it, but I take what you're saying into account. The Mark Monitor thing we haven't received, as far as I know. So this is the only one at the moment that falls into that. But I did hear that they were intending to send something. Amar, would you like to continue with that?
Just also because I'm a bit of a stickler for process, so I apologize about that, but if we're going to start receiving comments from non-working group participants at this stage, wouldn't it also be advisable to perhaps send out wider invitations, for example, from individual registrars and registries, from different civil societies, different private sector companies who are commercial registrants? But my problem with all that is that we're going to get way too bogged down right now in these individual responses we would be getting if we do want not just any input, but balanced input from different stakeholders with different interests. And that is why I feel it might be more appropriate to consider these things after the initial report of the working group is out and we send it out for public comment. So that's just why I have a bit of a problem with this right now.
Thank you for that. Yes, although the input is interesting, I take your point because it does open floodgates. So we can't really be seen to treat a particular organization in. A special way. So yes, I think, and especially because we're rapidly running out of time in this meeting, I think probably there needs to be a decision taken possibly at a future meeting. There's something going on in the chat room here. I'll just read that. Perhaps better because the wiki and other information is publicly available that may be triggering. Ha, yes. Yes, so I suppose effectively, the fact that we are being so open about what we're doing and we are putting so much of it online so that anybody can read it, yes, that is a likely explanation for how they've heard of what we're doing. Yes, and it is, I suppose, in a sense, almost a downside of making everything open like that. It leaves us with a policy decision, which I won't try and rush in a few minutes now. But we do need to actually think, when do we want to deal with this, and whether we should. deal with this in a telephone call in the near future. So Amma is certainly suggesting that it's put off until public comment starts, which, yes, I think perhaps we need an action for the next meeting, about a final decision on that. But that sounds as if it might be a good thing to do. Okay, that means that we've more or less timed out. So I'll just ask quickly, we don't really have time to do the work plan. Whether there's any other business. Okay, well, in that case, thank you very much for a really interesting call, and I should also explain now that I probably won't be able to attend meetings either next week or the one after, but Rudy is available to chair them. But anyway, thank you all very much for today.
Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye.
Not at all. Goodbye.
Thank you. Laura, if you could please stop the recordings at this time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day.